Hello everyone and welcome to this week's episode of Boat Briefing. My name is Stuart Campbell and here to help me navigate through all the news from the world of superyachting is Sophia Wilson.
Hello, I'm still recovering from the Monaco Lurgy, so apologies if I'm not sounding as fresh and bright as normal.
Everyone seems to be sick at the moment. Yeah. Cecile's still recovering. There's a few people
Cecile went to Monaco sick, which I think is always a dangerous position to find yourself in.
But brave.
Brave, yeah.
Brave Cecile.
Cecile is nothing if not brave.
That's true. Let's get some housekeeping notes out of the way. The first is the November issue of Boat International is out this Thursday. So this podcast should be out on Wednesday. So if you're listening to it on Wednesday, straight down to the shops tomorrow to pick up your copy of the November issue of Boat International. It is, of course, our refit special. On the cover is the newly extended 70-meter Force Blue, and other boats in the issue are Coral Ocean, the Bonetti Galaxy, and the Tough Little Explorer RH3. We also have a fascinating piece on how 3D printing is disrupting superyacht construction. What I took away from this piece is that you can't 3D print a superyacht just yet anyway. But it's really interesting. I mean, you can 3D print smaller craft. It's a little while away before we have massive ships. Just 3D
printing. How small are we looking?
Oh, yes.
There's some child size.
No. There's some cool day boats you can 3D print. And some of the day boats are cool because you 3D print them. And then you have it use it for a season. Then you can, I want a different, seat mold or something. Or it's got to be 2 foot longer. Or I want it to be pink. So you take it back, they shred it, feed the shredded plastic back into the 3D printing machine, they change the boat for you. And you can do this up to 5 times, apparently.
That is cool.
It is quite cool, isn't it? So it's absolutely reality in the small boat world, but big 100-meter 3D printed yachts is still a little way off. There's a piece about refitting in record time. Loads of great advice in this about how to get in and out of a shipyard quickly. It's certainly a massive trend now, especially for charter yachts. The demand on charter yachts is so strong now that they're working harder than ever. Seasons are stretching, so long, luxurious yard periods are definitely a thing of the past.
I'm not sure crew ever remember long, luxurious yard periods. I'm not sure.
Depends where you are. Barcelona is not a bad place to be stuck for a few months. It's also our watch special, so loads in this issue for you obsessive horologists, I think it's horologists.
Say it with confidence.
Horologists. And there's a great piece on the BVIs. So I learned something about this feature as well. There is a drink called a painkiller. I didn't know that. Have you had a painkiller before?
Yes, Stuart. Many. It won't surprise you to hear.
Is it nice?
Yeah, it's very nice. It's quite a lot of sugar, as with most of these things.
But quite fruity.
Sugar, bees, fruit, rum. What's not to like?
I've never had a painkiller.
Have you been to BVIs?
No, I don't think I have.
There's your issue.
Yeah. I'm going to go tick that box just so I can drink a painkiller. In other news, I am delighted to announce that FedShip has signed up to be a premium partner of our Between the Bays event, which is taking place between Anguilla and St. Martin in March next year, right before the St. Bart's Bucket. There's a lot happening in March next year. It's going to be a sensational event operated between two beautiful Belmond properties on those islands. There's plenty more information about the 4-day event on the website. But if you own a large yacht and you're planning to be in the area, this is not one to miss. Right. Housekeeping done.
Very efficiently.
Yeah, thank you. Well, since we both missed last week's podcast, we should probably briefly touch on Monaco. What were your highlights, Sophia?
I mean, there were lots, actually. It was a great show and it went actually very quickly. And the weather, I thought, for once, was, bar being quite windy, was actually quite forgiving. I wasn't too hot or rained on, which I think is a win. But I loved getting to go on board Come Together, which is obviously the first Amel 60. She is going to be the December cover. So I was furiously writing up that feature last week. She has got a winch interior, which is very cool. I mean, it's classic winch, but there's just so many details in there and so many different textures and materials and different craftsmanship. The staircase, for example, is a kind of helix that twists through the middle, and it's made from, I think it's sort of 4 sections of more than 100 slats, and each slat's individually crafted and fits together without any glue. So it's based on Japanese craftsmanship. So that's a just kind of indication of some of those details that are going into that yacht. So, well, you didn't see the staircase.
I didn't go on the boat.
Oh, right, okay.
That's my first problem.
Right, that would explain it. So it's great. Yeah, great to mention that. And as I say, that is going to be our December cover, which obviously, Stuart, you've been having lots of fun with the Beatles cover lines for that one.
with moderate success.
Yeah. Some of the other highlights were Darman hosted a great women in yachting event, which was on the top of the Oceanographic Museum. So lovely just to be able to get together with some other women from the industry. Rose Darman spoke incredibly well about some of the issues the industry potentially has. She had a very funny story about an interaction with a broker in her early days, but that's her tale. So I'll leave her to tell that another time. But so that was a real highlight for me. And then, of course, all the boat parties. The Owners Club was fantastic on Project X. Just brilliant yacht for that event. Great to see lots of the captains at the Captain's Club. And then, of course, the end of the week highlight was the big boat party at the Yacht Club. So I don't think any of them disappointed. How about you, Stu?
That was good fun. I was definitely taking some painkillers the next day, but not the drinking kind, after the big boat party. It was a very big night. I had a brilliant time. And I think lots of other people did too. It was just a great mood up there, wasn't there? On the top of the Yacht Club. It was a fantastic evening.
Well, I think where we sometimes end up in danger, and I will admit I slightly did, is obviously we have the party, it was fantastic. And then we tend to go on and have a kind of mini boat celebration afterwards. And that tends to be because you sort of end up having two nights in one. And that can be where it sometimes gets a little bit dangerous.
Yeah, yeah. Say no more. What did I loved, had a good look around Arpo. I thought sensational. I'd only ever seen pictures of it before, obviously. She's the biggest boat that's ever been at the Monaco.
Yeah, actually. Ever been port, yeah.
So I loved having a good look around her with Chris Callahan from Moran. Just the talk about details on Arpo. I mean, they said it was the most, I think they said it was the most detailed boat they've ever project managed. I think that's right. But even if that's not true, it should be true because the amount of materials on this boat is just off the charts. So at the party as well, on Friday night, we had Eddie Jordan and the Robbers playing. Classic entertainment. EJ got the spoons out, didn't he, at some point?
Yeah.
But he sent me a funny video because he was at the Oyster Regatta in the few days leading up to the party. So to make sound check at our event, he had to get off his boat that was racing in the Oyster Regatta, transfer to a tender with Rob Humphreys and a few other people, tender to shore, jet to Nice, taxi to Monaco in time for sound check, and he made it. He was knackered when I saw him, but then came alive on stage again. But there's a video of him getting off his boat.
Yeah, I've seen it.
He falls flat on his ass. And actually, he said, we should laugh. He said it bloody hurt. He said it was in loads of pain because it was a quite tricky transfer, that. But that's the length.
I mean, without wishing to see Eddie a disservice, he's not young these days. So actually to be getting off, and it was pretty blustery conditions from what I saw in the video. It was quite punchy.
It was quite punchy. But that's how much Eddie loves to entertain. He was not going to miss that party for the world. And then obviously, so after Monaco, a couple of us went down to Saint-Tropez because we do this lovely event every year and it's kind of like the perfect balm, really, because Monaco's crazy. And then you go to Saint-Tropez and it's just a bit easier going. And then we do a lovely event for owners and various other people on Talita. Taraghetti's sensational, classic. Sun's going down over Saint-Tropez, the sky's pink.
You always speak. I've never made it, and you always speak about it. This kind of wistful look in your eyes. So one year, I'm gonna have to make sure I get on the guest list.
Yeah, you absolutely should, because it is the great season closer. It's just a lovely way to wrap it all up, tie a bow in it, and head to Fort Lauderdale, because that is only a few weeks away.
Oh god, yeah, Fort Lauderdale. I'm very much in the running. I feel the world's most terrible mother. I've spent a lot of time away. Probably not quite as much as you used to.
I've been the world's most terrible father for a few years now, so I wouldn't worry about it.
Just set her expectations low, I reckon. Yeah. Early doors.
Where's mummy? She's in Tahiti.
She knows all the places now. Not again. Oh.
Yeah. Just before we move on entirely from Monaco, I just wanted to dwell on a few bits of news that came out of the show that piqued my interest. The first one was that the Ferretti Group announced that it's consolidating its supply chain. I mean, in these days of supply chain delays and inflation. I thought this was quite an interesting move from the massive Ferretti group, and it seems like good business. The two companies Ferretti has acquired are Macello and Fratelli Canaliccio. There's only a small chance I've got that right. So Macello's expertise is wooden furniture for yachts, and Fratelli Canaliccio develops and constructs things like fold-down balconies, terraces, molded furniture, fixed external structures on yachts and things like that. So Alberto Glassi, the CEO of the Ferretti Group, said that we are confident that the upstream integration will allow us to express even more quality and optimize costs and time. And I just wonder if this is the start of a more general trend for consolidation of the manufacturing chain in yacht building, particularly for massive volume builders like the Ferretti Group. It seems to make sense. And the UK builders like Sunseeker and Princess, they do a lot of this stuff in-house anyway. So I wonder, yeah, let's see what happens.
Yeah, I mean, if you're in a position to, why wouldn't you? Because then you just, you have complete control.
And that's absolutely
one of the, as you say, one of the biggest challenges at the moment.
Yeah, so be interesting one to watch that and see if other big Italian yards follow suit. The next one, catamaran news, as you'd expect. So Silent Yachts has let out a few more details. Well, it let out a few more details during the show about its in-built 36.7-meter motor catamaran. So the model started life as a Silent 100, but it's been extended by about 6 meters. It is a 499 gross ton interior in an LOA of 36.7 meters. Just demonstrates how little length you need in a cat platform for loads of volume. It even has a touch and go helipad. But the reason I wanted to highlight it is the way it looks. It's certainly avant-garde, with a couple of very aggressive wave-piercing protrusions on each hull. Go check it out. We'll put a link in the description. So Silent Yachts has 12 boats over 24 meters in build. Amazing. Lastly, and get back to Italy, I thought it was indicative that Balietto is building a 60 meter on spec. This will be its flagship. So such is the shipyard's confidence in the market. It's certainly busier than it ever has been, and it's betting on bigger boats. Construction on the first T60 will begin next year and is based on the same lines as the very successful T52 model designed by Francesco Pascalski, of which 6 orders have already been received. The T60 has a bang-on trend open stern with pool bar and all the other features you'd expect, and typical for Balietto. I'm always quite impressed by their sun decks. They're always large, and this is no exception. So the market is dragging these Italian yards larger, it seems. San Lorenzo's getting bigger, CRN's getting bigger, and now Balietto's getting bigger. So 60-meter started on spec. And if you'd said that 4 or 5 years ago, you'd say no way. But now you say, yep, yeah, makes total sense.
Yeah, I wonder how many flagships have been started on spec.
It's a good question.
It's a good data question.
We'll ring Raphael immediately on conclusion of this recording. So I wanted to spend a little bit of time just on the brokerage market very, very quickly. I know on last week's pod, it was mentioned as well, but I wanted to flag it again, particularly the year to October numbers, because if my calculations are correct and the trend stays as it is, my prediction for how the market will end up at the end of the year looks to be bang on.
I'm absolutely livid.
So we won't go month by month, because that'll just be a blizzard of numbers and you'll get bored very, very quickly. But the totals, the year to October totals. This year to October, there were 387 brokerage sales. In 2021, that number was 544. So year to October 2021, 544 sales. Year to October 2022, 387 sales. So that means 2022 is 29% slower than 2021 in brokerage terms, 29%. So if my maths is correct, and it often isn't, so I used a website called Percentage Calculator to help me on this one. If 2022 ends up remaining 29% slower than 2021, the year end will be 533 brokerage sales, which, to be fair, will still be the second strongest year for brokerage sales on record and by some distance. But it also means my prediction, Sophia, that the year would end on 525 is pretty, pretty bang on.
Yeah. So I saw this happening. Saw you typing this in the script and thought, I can never remember what numbers we all said at the beginning of the year, and I have to kind of go frantically back through this massive Google Doc that we have to find it. Anyway, I found it. And at the start of the year, I said 650, Charlotte said 610, and you said 525. If you get the exact number of sales, I might have to splash out on actual champagne for a brand we recognise rather than Lidl's Finest this time.
I just, what an intuition. I think just it's a moment of...
Well, yeah, but I mean, the year's not over yet. So we could have a late flurry. And there has been, as I think they touched on last week, there's been a lot of action. Obviously, the first Amel's 80 has been sold. Corinthia 7 was sold. And according to the monthly brokerage review, the new listings for September exceeded $1 billion for the first time this year. So there is plenty coming onto the market. So that gives me a bit of hope.
So what you're saying is arrogance comes before the fall.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. Fair enough. And there are a couple of other kind of big sales this week. So the 54-metre Forever One was sold by Camper Nicholson's in Edmundston, delivered in 2014. She was asking $34.95 million. And according to Camper's marketing manager, that marked the third sale to close in the week following Monaco.
Just shout out to the owners of Forever One, the coolest, nicest super owners you'll ever meet.
Are they buying something else, do you know? No. You say? No.
They're out.
And also the first Benetti Beyond Gogga. Is that right?
Correct. Gogga.
That sounds wrong.
It's right.
Are you sure?
Yeah.
You just make me sound like a fool.
No, Gogga mi Gogga. It's like a Tuscan saying or something. It means friends. I don't quite know.
The first Benetti Beyond Superyacht Gogga was sold by James Hall at TWW Yachts. She's the first of 8 Benetti Beyonds currently under construction or on order. We don't know her asking price. And then there have also been a couple of very notable price drops, which again, I'm hoping that's going to mean that these yachts get sold. So the 68-metre Soarings had a £10 million price drop. So she's now asking £88 million. And the 82-metre Seraphisa is, so she's for sale with Burgess. And she's also had a €10 million euro price drop. And she's now asking £65 million. So there we go. There's lots of brokerage news out there. And your champagne isn't safe yet, Stuart.
And some quality boats, some real quality boats on the market. Not many, but there is some quality out there. So just circling back a little bit. So just as a reminder, so 2021 brokerage sales ended on 750. 2020 was 428. 407 was in 2019. So even if the market, like we said, was 30% below 2021, still a phenomenal year for the brokerage market.
Which I'm not sure you would have thought in, February and March this year.
Well, in February and March this year, it was actually tracking very, very closely. And actually, this year started stronger than 2021. So there were more brokerage transactions in Jan 2022 than Jan 2021. The same, it was 46 in both years in February. And there was 64 in March 22 and 62 in March 21. So then the years kind of broke in April. May, June were way down in 2022 compared to 2021. But summer last year the market's never seen anything like it. It was just 91 boats sold in June 2021.
Yeah.
Hard to believe.
Yeah.
Anyway, enough brokerage. Let's talk people and skills.
Yeah, so I think we've spoken about this on the podcast before, that we partnered with the Superyacht Recruiter earlier this year to do the first ever shoreside survey, looking at kind of some of the issues facing the industry and generally kind of trying to get a bit of a sense across all the different, shipbuilding, brokerage, marketing, all the different elements. And there's been some interesting themes that have come out of it. I think we've spoken before about some of the gender and diversity issues. And we also had a look, there was a lot of questioning about how social media is being used out of the industry and the increased use of that. And I've just finished putting together the third article, which looks at career duration in the industry. And one of the key findings, which probably isn't a huge surprise, was the extensive length of time that most people have spent working in the superyacht industry. So some top line numbers, for example, in shipyard management, 65% of respondents have been in the industry for more than a decade, and a further 27% have been in the industry for 3 to 9 years. The trend was also seen in brokerage, with 50% of sales brokers haven't been in the industry for more than a decade. And perhaps not unsurprisingly, industry longevity was the highest at C-suite level, with 89% of participants having been in the industry for more than 10 years, and the rest having all been involved for more than 3 years. I mean, clearly there's a lot of positives to longevity, understanding, skill set, knowledge, network, we all know them. But there are also concerns as to whether this is going to create a kind of lack of fresh talent entering the industry, and actually in turn, whether this could, in a few years down the time, lead to a kind of skill gap shortage, particularly if people in the industry, the kind of median age gets older and older, and you don't necessarily have that younger generation coming in. Stu, I don't know what your thoughts are. I feel how you've got more than two decades in the industry now.
Not quite. So when did I've been in yachting for, oh God, this is going to make me feel very old. Yeah, probably two decades in yachting, but in super yachting, not quite a decade. So what I would say is, I mean, yeah, you do, it is a, I mean, the barrier to entry seems to be quite high to this industry, knowledge-wise. I don't think you're accepted unless you have a certain level of knowledge. And that can be sometimes quite intimidating for new entrants, I think. But stick around and the rewards are there, absolutely. But I think a lot of people bounce out without really, really developing their networks and knowledge base and all that kind of stuff. It's a shame, though, that this is, we aren't seeing much more fresh talent coming into the business. I mean, it's not a massive industry as well, let's face it. But it would be great to, if it was felt a bit more open to new entrants and new talent, new ideas and all of that kind of stuff. I feel like it's going in that direction generally, certainly better than it ever has been.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's better. So I joined the industry 8 years ago, and I think even in that time, there's been a huge change. And I think for me, it's probably, from what I've seen from a very personal perspective, it's kind of twofold. I think one, a lot of people just don't know the industry exists. I certainly didn't know that the industry exists. You know, you maybe see a super yacht occasionally when you're on a summer holiday, but you've got no idea that there's this huge industry that underpins that, be that shipyards, brokerage, marketing. I mean, I just had no idea about the depth of the industry before I was involved in it. And then I think there's the second stage of how do you welcome new people into the industry and how do you make sure that you are bringing a variety of different skills and talent into the industry. And that's the kind of the second challenge around it. And they kind of fit into each other as to where the industry is being seen, how you're recruiting, how you're going out and trying to get the best people, I suppose.
So while we're talking about new entrants to the industry, we should actually probably just talk about the fact that we are recruiting in the editorial team. So if you love business and want to write about super yacht business, we have a business editor opening. It's a great job working with Sophia and her team, covering the entire industry, supply chain, brokers, management, shipyards, the works. You meet loads of interesting people, work with some great people at Boat International. So, reach out, podcast@boatinternationalmedia.com. We've successfully recruited one person through this podcast.
Charlie will forever be our podcast success story.
I know, So let's see if we can get another one. So come and join the team. podcast@boatinternationalmedia.com if you think you could be our next business editor. But anyway, back to skills, people and skills survey.
Well, as part of this, as a follow-on from this, I'm actually going to be hosting a roundtable on kind of on some of the topics being raised by this survey during METS, which I think should be really interesting. And I'm really looking forward to hearing lots of different opinions on ways that the industry can change and also maybe ways the industry doesn't need to change. It doesn't all have to be negative. But we're just in the process of sending out invites for that. And we're looking to pull together some pretty punchy characters. So I think it might be an interesting one to manage.
That would be fascinating. I might try and be a fly on the wall for that one.
We'll just sit in the corner.
Yeah, sit in the corner, mute, just listening. I think it'd be really interesting. All right, some news.
So first up is FedShip's latest launch, the 118-meter Project 1010, which has been spotted undertaking sea trials in the North Sea this week. The 4,999 GT yacht marks a significant milestone for the Dutch shipyard as it's the longest launch to date, superseding the 110-metre Anna, which was, of course, launched in 2018. The yacht's midnight blue exterior comes from Espen Bueno, while the interiors have been headed up by French studio Zoretti. The images that we've seen of the yacht seem to indicate that she's got a main deck swimming pool, a large helipad and a hangar on the upper deck. She also appears to have a quite a unique kind of pod-style sky lounge encased by some curved glass. It's quite divisive between the team. Some of us love it. Some people are unsure, particularly about the Skyland. So go and have a look and make your opinion for yourself. The yacht is FedShip's second largest new build under construction and is eclipsed only in length by 118.8-metre Project 181, which is set for delivery in 2024.
I think regardless of how it looks, can you imagine how sensational the view would be from that observation pod at the top of the boat. So it looks 360, right? So you sit up there having a drink with the best view.
It must be an amazing space.
Oh, it would be epic, I think. So we'll try and sneak our way onto that boat at some point. Yeah, and have
our discussion's going.
Ongoing.
Okay.
Next up is the news that Admiral, flagship brand of the Italian Sea Group, has laid the keel on its Galileo 82 project. The 82-metre superyacht was sold in December 2021 in a deal closed by FGI Group and marked the Italian Sea Group's entrance into the US market for larger superyachts. The superyacht project will be built in steel and aluminium and has been designed in-house with British studio Bannenberg and Rau curating the interior. Accommodations for 12 guests and 28 crew, with 130 square meter upper deck entirely dedicated to the owner's suite. How indulgent. I bet it's going to be pretty special. Elsewhere, there is more than 100 square meters of space dedicated to lounging on each deck, granted by a generous 13.3 meter beam. The interior design remains tightly under wraps. The yacht is scheduled for delivery in July 2025 and is one of the largest builds for the shipyard to date, following 75 meter Kensho, which wowed the crowds at the Monaco Yacht Show, even though she was at anchor and had to disappear for a couple of days because the weather was so bad. Also in build at the Italian Sea Group is the 82-metre Project Skyfall and the 98-metre Project Titanium. Wow, they're on fire.
So next up, I feel bad taking this one, Stuart, catamaran corner, but we
have... I've already had my catamaran fill this week. Yeah.
The two stories from Sunreef, they actually came out at Monaco Yacht Show, but I don't think they were covered last week. So I just, as they were catamarans, thought we'd better make sure they were ticked off. So the first is that the Polish yard has signed a contract to build the world's largest electric catamaran, the Sunreef 43-metre Eco. The newest addition to the shipyard's Eco fleet, the hull, superstructure and rigging of the vessel feature integrated solar panels supplying the yacht with green energy, while an advanced hydrogeneration system produces clean power for emission-free cruising and infinite range, according to the shipyard. At the same time, Sunreef, which is of course celebrating their 20th anniversary this year, has also announced that they've been commissioned to build a 24-metre sailing yacht powered only by hydrogen and solar power. The hydrogen-powered CAT is being billed as a groundbreaking project designed to achieve unrivaled autonomy for a new level of eco-conscious cruising. The hydrogen power harness will be used to power both the hotel load as well as the engines. And the yacht will also feature Sunreef's patented solar power system with solar cells integrated into the composite bodywork.
Sunreef, congratulations. Happy birthday, Sunreef. And massive congrats on all your continued success. Gratuitous plug moment. If you go onto our Instagram, you can see an interview I did with Fernando Alonso, F1 Supremo. When was that? God, about a month ago. About his new Sunreef project. He talks about the catamaran platform, why he went for a cat, benefits of it all, and how much he's looking forward to it. He wouldn't tell me the name, though, which was frustrating. But that's on our Instagram. If you go there and have a look, you can watch my interview with Fernando, who seemed like just the loveliest guy. Last up, we have the story that Brazilian shipyard MCP Yachts has celebrated the launch of its 37.4-metre all-aluminium superyacht Queen Tati. The project was developed in collaboration with Dutch studio Vrijpak and represents a new superyacht era in South America, according to the shipyard. Queen Tati features a semi-displacement hull with a beam of 8.1 metres and a draft of 2.2 metres. Her 316 gross tonne interior offers accommodation for up to 12 guests across four cabins with quarters for a crew of eight. She's the second largest build for the shipyard, following the 43.76 metre Rafaela II, which was also designed in collaboration with Vrijpak. Okay, so Queen Tati, 37.4 metre monohull, the Silent Yachts, 120, 36.7 metre, 500 gross tons.
Yeah,
499, rather.
Yeah.
I mean...
Queen Tati's lovely there. I'm sure the Vrijpak team have done an exceptional job.
I have no doubt it will be a sensational boat. No one does it better than Vrijpak. But just as an equivalence in that length, you get almost, 180 more gross tons. Anyway, enough about me banging on about catamarans.
You're staring me in quite an intense way. I don't know what.
Why can't you just, wow, you're so right,
Sorry.
Stuart.
Sorry, wow, gosh, Stuart, you're so right.
Was that so hard? No, was that so hard?
No, sorry. I'll get it down next week.
Yeah, okay. Let's talk. Why don't you take us away with Data?
So Data, which is ever, is brought to you by Boat Pro, the industry's leading super yacht market intelligence service. And this week, we're going to have a little look at support vessels because it follows the news that the 75-meter Damen YS7512 was launched this weekend. And it's also a topic that we are going to discuss at this year's Explore Yacht Summit, which I will do a quick plug while we're here, is going to be on November the 10th, so under a month away by the time you're listening to this podcast, at the Yacht Club in Monaco. Promises to be a fantastic day, great lineup of owners, captains, industry experts. I'm going to kind of try and do our best to cover lots on the build and technical side, but also lots of kind of inspirational destination stuff and lots of first-hand experiences. So if you haven't already got your tickets, go to the website and you can buy them now.
Excellent plug.
Thank you very much. But moving on from that, so it's quite a niche fleet, the support vessel fleet, as you'd expect, of just 50 yachts with a total LOA of 2,769 metres and an average LOA of 55.4 metres. The average GT is 1,000, and of the fleet of 50, 20 of the projects are conversions. So that means roughly 40% of the fleet.
So it's still, so it's a very nascent part of the industry then, isn't it?
Yeah. Not many of the owner nationalities are known, but we do know that 14 of these support vessels belong to American clients. I'm not sure that's quite enough to say that it's a trend, but I suppose it could be. That's quite a sizable proportion. And the standout delivery that we're looking forward to this year is the 80-meter U81 by Damen, and she will go on to become the support vessel for Here Comes the Sun, is our understanding.
Great. I love the look of this boat, and particularly because it's on Instagram video. There's an Instagram video of a drone shot circling the boat, and you can see some guys playing cricket on the back deck of the boat.
That is quite cool.
Very cool. Immediate favourite for me.
There's currently 9 projects under construction, and as I mentioned at the top, obviously the Damen YS7512 was launched this weekend and she makes the new flagship of the support series. Now, I'm not sure whether we're allowed to say this or not, but I'm going to go for it. According to online sources, which is not us, the first hull is supposedly going to become the shadow of a giant sailing yacht, which is currently under construction in the Netherlands for an American client. So read into that what you will. We cannot validate that anywhere. And another interesting project that's under construction moving Sicily on is the 53-metre Sea Club, which is being built by Alia Yachts in Turkey. We covered the yacht news last week because the hull and the superstructure were joined. And this project is particularly interesting because she is a support vessel, but she could also be used kind of independently for exploration cruises. So I think the idea is that she'll kind of serve that dual purpose.
So I was actually talking to the owner of this boat, and Gorkan from... Alia at our event at the Yacht Club on Friday night. So I was seeing a few more pictures of it. It looks very, very cool, this boat. I love, just the lifestyle opportunities it offers you. It's a bit smoother, a bit softer than what you'd typically class as a support vessel. But she looks super functional and very, very cool indeed.
So looking at the fleet overall, in comparison to when we last covered this topic about 18 months ago, the fleet is already 10% larger and there are 45% more new projects under construction. So it does look like it's a growing area and it's something that is gathering interest. I mean, it's never going to be huge, is it? Because you've got to be trying to use your yacht in a certain way if you're going to need a support vessel as well. But as I mentioned, we will be discussing this topic at the Explore Yacht Summit next week. And we've got a couple of confirmed speakers already on that panel. Robert Smith, who's Director of Yacht Consultancy and Technical Support and a founder of Shadowcat, and also the designer for Nebula, is also confirmed. And there will be a couple of others as well.
Get your tickets today. And that brings us to the end of this week's Boat Briefing, which was mixed and produced by Grace Nielsen and is a production of Boat International Media. Don't forget to like and subscribe, and we'll see you next time.